Let's call the Local Government Committee Division to order. Let's start out with Representative Mullery is here, so we'll start with Representative Mullery. We've heard this bill before, and we laid it on the table, so... And we amended it.
Mr. Chair, I think we're working off the A10 2006. Delete all amendments, so... And then we have, I believe, three amendments to that that I have not heard any objection to. Although...
I've got two here.
I only have the A2 and the A1, but I believe the League of Cities has another one.
I have... Representative Mullery, I have an A3, an A2, and an A1.
Okay. I haven't got the A3. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
So,
Mr. Chair, I can either describe them and
why don't you describe them? We'll wait till we get a quorum before we can take action.
Why don't I describe them? We did hear an hour and a half on the A10 2006, so we probably had that one pretty well described. The A1 amendment is one that I brought up the issue last time that people may suddenly lose the park that they bought across the street from, and so what this would do would be require a hearing for properties within 400 feet before the local government changed the use. This was suggested by the legislative representative from the real property section of the Bar Association. And then A2 is from the Minneapolis Park Board, because they are technically apparently might not be considered. The attorneys couldn't determine if they'd be for sure covered by the city, because they are a separate elected board in Minneapolis, unlike anywhere else in the state. And my understanding is everybody's also agreed on that one. And then the third one, I'd ask Ms. Dyson to explain. It's from the League of Cities. And it's my understanding that the agency is okay with, the Department of Revenue is okay with that one, I believe. But if you could have Ms. Dyson explain it better.
Thank you. Ms. Dyson, could you explain?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment, I believe, was forwarded from the Department of Revenue on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, and it adds to the subdivision that's defining what is an authorized public use and in the conveyance of a public use deed to a governmental unit that no monetary compensation or consideration is required for the conveyance, and then it just specifies that it's still subject to the provisions that one relates to conveying the non-conservation tax forfeited land to a common interest community association by quick claim deed if the county board determines that they had a prior right to that parcel and for some reason it didn't happen before. And then the other parts, it's still subject to the reversion provisions, and it specifies two of them, but basically any reversion provision would apply. And the two reversion ones that are specified both relate to failure to use the property as an authorized public use.
Okay. We now have a quorum, so I'm going to make a motion that 1395 be amended. That'd be the A10 206 amendment be before us. Motion is to pass and return to the local government Operations Reform and Technology Committee. Hold on that. All in favor? No, don't, okay. Okay, that's already been amended the last time, so that we're working off the A10-206 amendment. And which amendment do you want to take first?
Mr. Chair, I suppose either one, we might as well just go in order, A1, A2, A3.
So I'll move the A1 amendment, and can you describe that? And
oh, Mr. Chair, that's the one I described. It just so that people, because under the new law, people could lose a park that they moved in next to. This just requires a city or local government to notify the people within 400 feet before they actually do it, so that at least they can come and object or something like that. And as I said, that was an idea from the legislative chairman for the real property section of the Bar Association.
Okay. Is there anybody in the audience who would wish to speak for or against the A1 amendment? Any members have any questions? Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mullery, as I look at the A10 amendment that I believe we're working off of on page 2, line 29, we talk about classifying or reclassifying the forfeited lands, and then in that section, if I go over to page 3, line 1, you discuss that the notice must be mailed or delivered at least 60 days before the date of the meeting. Now, on the A1 amendment, it looks like if we are going to make the reclassification, all property owners must be notified at least 10 days and not more than 60 days before the hearing. So I'm wondering if there might be a conflict there, Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, I would ask Ms. Dyson. I believe that they work together. I believe she drafted the A1.
Ms. Dyson.
Or was it Mark Shepard? I can't remember.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Biskins and Mullery, I drafted the A1. The A1 is adding a separate subdivision that relates to the change in use after all of the conveyances have taken place. So making time periods the same, but these are two different stages, right, in what's happening with this property.
That's my understanding.
If I understand the bill correctly, the part that you're referring to is talking about classifying or reclassifying tax forfeited land, but I may not be the right person to answer this question, to be honest. It looks like someone from the Department of Revenue can explain the first part of this, not the amendment.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Mr. Chair, my name is Jason Nord with the Department of Revenue, and I think I can help clarify. The notice that's required when a piece of property is going to be classified is an initial process. What the A1 amendment deals with is after a use deed has been granted to a city and they need to put the property to that use, there are some exemptions in current law where they can use the economic development statutes to sell the property, and then that is not considered a failure to meet the original use. And so that ultimately ends up with parcels being taken for one use but being sold under economic development purposes to be used for something else. And what the A1 amendment would do would say that if you've acquired the property on a use deed and you are going to be making a change of use, such as selling it under Chapter 469 to be used for something else, then this new notice would kick in and help deal with those changes in use at that point in time. So it's just two different points in time and two different notice processes.
Representative Biskins. Any other questions? If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We'll do the A2 amendment then. Take them in order. And I'll move the A2 amendment. And Representative Mueller, you want to describe that again for the...
Mr. Chair and members, this is for the Minneapolis Park Board because they're separate legal status and an elected board, unlike the rest of the state. And so they need to be covered because they would have certain properties that would be covered under this. So they just need to be included in a local government because apparently the definition didn't automatically include them. So that's nobody's objective.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mueller, you said Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. My ears immediately perked up because I'm aware that they're standing in the way of an outstanding hydro project. And I want to know if this will affect that in a positive in any fashion, or are we still leaving them to their own devices down there?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mueller.
Representative Beard. I don't think this has anything to do positive or negative with that. That's the best of my knowledge.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just know that this representative is tempted to think up something we could do with it to help make it affect the outcome. But because I like you, I won't afflict you with that problem. We'll take that up elsewhere.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Thank you that I did go through what I had a dogfighting bill in Carlson's committee, and Representative Kahn started getting into applying it to Siamese fighting fish, and Representative Seifert got into rodeos. So thank you.
Any more questions on the amendment? Anyone who wishes to speak for or against the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And now we have the A3. Put the wrong one up here. Okay. And the A3 amendment. And I'll move the A3 amendment to get it before us. And Representative Mallory.
Mr. Chairman, this one, Mr. Nord will have to explain.
Mr. Nord?
Mr. Chair, what this amendment does is we've made so many changes to the subdivision that's being amended that we lost track of the fact, or it wasn't obvious anymore that the use deeds that are under paragraph E of the new language, that they do remain free of cost. And that created some... At first, we had heard some feedback and some concerns about the bill because they thought that the use deeds were to be purchased at full market value. So this clarifies that those deeds are free, but then it also provides a cross-reference to the reversionary restrictions in subdivisions 1C and 1D, so that when someone's reading that part of the law, they know that they need to look at the other part of the law to see what the reversionary restrictions are. And so I think it's just additional language that makes the total law read a little more cleanly without really substantially changing anything.
Any questions of the testifier? Anyone?
Anonymous.
Okay. Anybody from the audience that would like to speak for or against the amendment? Seeing no one coming down. All in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Motion prevails. Now, if you just want to quickly describe this or what we've got as amended, or...
Mr. Chairman, basically it's just changing the present situation is that revenue has to sort of be a statewide cop as far as looking into the uses that these things are put at and a lot of other things that the Department of Revenue really shouldn't be doing. And I think this is a clean way of taking care of it. I don't know if you want more of an explanation. Mr. Nord can explain in detail, but you had an hour and a half before on it.
Any questions on the bill? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mallory, could you please explain to me the purpose of the addition of Part 4 on page 1, line 1.21? The words seem rather sketchy. Could you maybe you could clear it up simply by letting me know what is an unimportant environmental or ecological system? Because then I can figure out what an important one is if I understand what an unimportant one is.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mullery.
I would hope that Mr. Nord can answer that, the drafter of the language.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, that language was added at the request of the Environmental Committee in the Senate when this bill traveled through the Senate last year. They just wanted some acknowledgement that the protection of all sorts of environmental and ecological systems are an important goal that counties should take into consideration when they're classifying tax forfeited lands and when they're making decisions about selling it as non-conservation land or keeping it and maintaining it as conservation lands. So it was just it may not be the most perfect language, but it seemed to satisfy the Environmental Committee in the Senate.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And senators, they do odd things, right? I think if you have any comfort in this language, it would be comfort to lawyers. Mm-hmm. So as you look at it, it says up earlier on line 1.17, the classification furthermore, and then they use the definitive word must. And now we're adding in a sentence, it must protect and sustain important environmental and ecological systems. When you have something so ill-defined as that, coupled with the mandatory word must, I think any classification or reclassification of these lands would be open to suit by either side of dissension of the classification. And so, you know, I think as this bill moves forward, we should either drop that language and have a discussion with the powdered wigs, which I think we would welcome, or at least, if we're going to keep the concept, let's tighten it up so that it actually means something.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nord and I were just saying that it's no more vague than conserve and develop natural resources, which is already in the language.
And Mr. Chair, I think we at one point in time we had talked about that, because remember that this law is from 1941, and so a lot of this is still a carryover from those times when they liked to introduce each piece of legislation with kind of guiding principles. And at one point in time, we had considered dropping a lot of this language, but some of the counties thought that it was important for the statute to give them some support by identifying what some of the goals are. And so certainly maybe the word must could be changed, or some of this language could be altered. But our intention isn't to create restrictions in this language, but just to offer some overall guiding principles that counties can point to when they're making decisions about classifying tax forfeited land.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, to Representative Mowery's point, Representative, conserve and develop the natural resources is fairly specific. Protect and sustain important environmental and ecological systems. If you cannot tell me what unimportant ones are, how can you tell me what important ones are? I think that's a whole lot more vague.
Mr. Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I you can argue about what's vague or not. Every law we put in the books is vague to some extent. So I actually think that it's good language.
Representative Biskins. Okay. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to be fair to Representative Mullery and to you, Mr. Chair, I just want to share a question I have in my head about process. As you remember, when we had our joint committee hearing, which I think was very helpful and fairly thorough, Representative Drazkowski and I independently came up with a what we think could be an alternative approach to proceeding with the use deed fix. I forwarded some of those thoughts to staff who works on property taxes, and just conferred with her as I walked in the room that she did not receive those emails, and so she and I had a short conversation about the substance of the emails. But it's clear that it's very that we need to spend some more time thinking about it. And my intention is not to kill or attempt to stop Representative Mullery's bill, but to be able to find a way to provide that alternate approach. And so I think I'm asking for, Mr. Chair, if you have any guidance about whether we might be able to lay over the bill and hear it again before deadline, or if Representative Mullery has some thoughts. My one concern about, to be fair as well, Representative Mullery, is we know that Chair Pawlowski does not like hearing bills that have remained in controversy when they get to his committee from a division. And so I find myself stuck in this awkward position of having real concerns about whether there's a better approach that can streamline this system and help us save some money and still have this work, or whether we're going to carry the controversy into the next committee if there is some. I'm not sure what the best approach here is to do, because it's not fair to Representative Mueller to just bring this at the last minute. It was really a technical glitch, I think, that the emails didn't get there.
Mr. Chair, we did ask that everybody have amendments to you and I by last week.
Representative Kaelian, we did put that in the email that went out on this, that we had amendments to get them to us. There was the public notice on it. But this is going to be heard again in government ops. Mm-hmm. And the note I have given me here, it's on Wednesday, all these bills that we passed today will be heard in government ops. This bill will end up going to civil law.
I think there's one more, and I can't remember where.
One more stop. So there, it's going to be more than one stop before this bill, when the bill leaves here. I don't know.
Yes, there is.
And I don't know if you, and Representative Kaelin, I don't know if you've spoken with revenue, because taxes, we just whispered them in here, it's going to go to taxes. But if you've spoken to revenue about this, because they're the ones that brought this bill forward to try and straighten up this and move it out of the tax or the revenue department where it probably shouldn't be. So I don't know if you've spoken to them about your idea or.
And to that question, Mr. Chair, my hope is that Ms. Baker and I, in-house researcher works on property taxes for us and who's been part of these discussions, that we didn't need to use revenue's time unless she felt like there was viability in our solution. From our first conversation, I believe that there may be. I think she has a lot of questions that we need to walk through, but I'm a little perplexed here. So I know that Representative Hornstein may have.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, no, Mr. Chair, I guess I would, and Representative Mueller has worked really hard on this. He's worked with the appropriate agency, and you know, it's going to be controversial, I think, wherever it goes. That's the nature of anything with taxes and property, I think. And so I would urge that we move this forward, and if there's an appropriate amendment that could be presented at GovOps, I don't think it's generally the case, Representative Kaelin, you're right, that, you know, division reports adopted and we move things along. But there are occasions where things pass through this committee, go to GovOps, and are debated and are discussed there. And you know, hopefully there would be an opportunity to refine it further, maybe incorporate some of your ideas. But we are getting pretty late. Bill deadline's approaching, and we've had an informational hearing already several weeks ago. We've had more amendments that have improved the bill. So I would just urge that, you know, unless people strongly oppose the substance of the bill, that we move it along. And I would urge that we support Representative Mullery in that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to reiterate, this bill started last year, and the department's had this problem. I believe they have something, they're involved in lawsuits, that we need to get this straightened out. And to not do anything this year, 2 years in a row, would, in my opinion, not be an appropriate way to treat the revenue department on this issue, where they're in kind of a box. And we did, I've been talking to you about this, and you put it on for the very first hearing date, and still not, I still have not heard any comments to changing the basic ways we've done this, other than these three amendments.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mullery, the line that Representative Briskins raised here just a moment ago, 121, you talked about some environmental groups wanted that put in there. And I'm looking at the whether or not there's a peg there to hang lawsuits on. Tell me who, if you can, tell me who was interested in putting that in. What interest group are we referring to specifically?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I didn't say that. I had no idea where that came from. Mr. Nord was at the Senate hearings and said it came in there. I think that the word important, while you can argue about that it creates an ambiguity, I think if we don't have it in there, then somebody would be able to come in with some really tiny thing, and that isn't what I think we want. And so you have to have some kind of a qualifier, I believe, in there, but I don't know what Mr. Nord can maybe say what groups came in, but I have no idea.
Mr. Nord.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, it actually came just from Senator Chaudhry. There wasn't really an interest group. Okay. It just came out of the discussion of the Senate hearing. And so it was something that we came up with in response to his concerns, and haven't heard any objection until now. So,
Representative Beard.
Thank you. That helps helps me know what we're dealing with here. Secondly, I just heard comment again about deadlines. Have we had deadlines published? Do we know when they actually are? That's not for the witness, and maybe off topic. But
Representative Beard, I'm hearing that they got tentative deadlines, and we are very short on the number of meetings we have left before deadline, seeing as how we only meet once a week. So if we postpone this, it probably won't make deadlines this year. So that's the question. If we move it forward, it's going to, like I said, in civil law, it'll be in taxes. That
this member would find it helpful to know just what calendar day that is. When you know, would you share it with us? Good, thanks.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
No, thanks. I pass.
Representative Palin.
I think to Representative Beard's general point, if the bill is passed the Senate, then whatever that deadline, the bill is not passed the Senate, is not out of...
No. Yeah, I'm not sure where it's at. Representative Mueller, do you know where it's at in the Senate?
Not this year. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. No, not this year. I don't know where it is.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to move to lay the bill on the table. I believe that's the proper motion. With this request, if the motion succeeds, and Representative Druskowski and I have time to sit down with Ms. Baker and then hopefully Revenue, and we will make that happen this week, knowing that she knows the basic issue, I will hand deliver the note so she gets it. If you will make the commitment to put it on the calendar, on the agenda for next week, and if there are no issues that we can move it, I will then make the motion to take it from the table, and we'll move the bill and move it on out, and ask that the division move it out from there very quickly.
Well, my understanding of what the deadlines are, if we do that, it's probably not possible for it to make deadlines in either house, and so then would effectively you'd be killing the bill for this year.
I Mr. Chair, I don't think so. I think that it can be moved from committee to committee. As when I've seen bills make four committee stops in a week to make deadline, I imagine that whatever deadline is that week will be meeting frequently, and Representative Mullery chairs one of the key committees, so I'm sure that we can move it through. And if this committee wants to move the bill out, and they can defeat my motion. This is not an effort to kill the bill. It's merely that I think that there's an alternative way that we should take a day or two to have the opportunity to work with staff to check that and then move it forward. And I just want to, this is in good faith. I'm not trying to mess with the bill. People around here know that if I don't like an idea, I'll speak out about it. That's not the case here. I just have some serious questions about it.
Two only meets one day a week. One year.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that if the deadline I've heard about possible, I don't think we'd make it then, because...
Yeah, the possible deadline I've heard is the 12th.
Right.
And so I don't think we'd make it. We would only have one meeting left before that.
Well, Mr.
And
excuse me, sorry.
Are you going to make that? Are you going to make that motion?
I move to table the bill.
Okay, Representative Kalin moves to table House File 1395 as amended. Representative Eastland.
I think that's a non-debatable motion.
I think so. Okay.
It's a non-debatable motion. All in favor of tabling the bill, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Division. I think I'm in question. All in favor, please raise your hand. All opposed? So there are five opposed to tabling and four to table it. So the motion is defeated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eastland, you had a question.
Well, I was just going to speak, Mr. Chair, to Representative Galen's comments first. I think there's some significant issues in this bill that I guess I'm troubled by, and I was just going to support his position to table the bill, at least to give us some more time to look at it. But I guess that's mute at this point.
We had you down there, yes. To the bill, to that point, that's why earlier in the session we had this informational hearing with both committees, because it was a lot of an hour and a half meeting that we had to get the information out, and with laying it over so that people could look at it and come up with things. It would have been nice if you had gotten the emails, and I understand things happen. But with that, I think, is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going through the delete all amendment here and stuff. I think the stuff that Representative Biskins brought up was important, but I think it's just the tenor of the bill that we're just taking this land and we're marketing it. I mean, we're marketing it. It's placing where it talks about determining market value. I don't know where the money goes. The money goes to the county, to the taxing jurisdiction. That's where it goes.
Representative Mulry or Mr. Nord?
Mr. Nord. Mr. Chair, the money goes. There's a whole schedule by which it's distributed, but it essentially boils down to 40-40-20 county, city, schools. So it all stays with the local governments.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I struggle with is the fact that if there's tax forfeited land, it's forfeited because they didn't pay their taxes. And the value of the land basically to the taxing jurisdictions is what the delinquent taxes. But there's provisions in here that give the county or whoever who has the selling jurisdiction the ability to market this stuff, to put a current market value on it, to split it up, to combine it, to do whatever they want. I mean, there's a lot of discretion in here. So, this could be a profitable thing, actually, for local governments to do. I mean, they could actually make money. If there was a valuable piece of land that was tax forfeited, they could take it and they could basically, sell it for market value. I just struggle with that whole idea that somehow we're just entering the whole area of market values to dispose of this land and giving all that discretion to the county.
Mr. Nord.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, the current law already allows either the land to be sold at full market value or to be given away for free on a use deed and what we've run into is just dramatic problems administering use deeds, and it's being, quite frankly, abused as the only free option. And so we've been working on this for 3 or 4 years now, trying to bring a 1941 law up to modern times, and so we've created a number of options, not just the free use deed option that we've tried to rein in and be more specific about, but also to create some less than full price options. And so it's something we've worked very hard at, and it's certainly a large issue to come to terms with. But this doesn't have to be the final word on the matter. Hopefully it can be the final word on the matter this year, and it's a law that if you'd like to revisit in the years to come, hopefully we don't go another 60 years before it's touched again. But it's just a law that is dramatically out of date, giving the Department of Revenue a tremendous amount of troubles, and we think this is the best option for 2010 for addressing those issues.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I guess I would just say that, I mean, my basic feeling is that the purpose and the goal and the main objective of any law of this nature should be to get the property back under private ownership for somebody paying taxes. And it seems to me like this bill and what it's doing is not moving in that direction necessarily. So I think that's kind of my concern, and that would be where I would probably oppose this.
Representative Mullery. Mr. Nord,
Mr. Chair, we both think that it does more towards what Representative Eastland is talking about than it is under present law.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have to say, having served on a city council for a long time, these things don't come up that often. It's not like you get a piece of tax forfeited property once a month. It doesn't happen that often. And whenever I had dealt with it on our city council, we were very serious about what we did with that. We followed the law quite specifically, and our intent was as well to get it back on the tax rolls. You have to understand that when somebody's property goes tax forfeit, the other taxpayers are picking up the tab for that person that didn't pay their taxes. So it's an equalization, and we always tried to put it back on the tax rolls, and it pains me to see that some of these examples that you showed where people were not taking it very seriously to the intent of the law, I think we have to correct. I think this is a great move in the right direction to getting some of this property back in the tax rolls.
Representative Blanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill, as it's been amended to this point, may still have a ways to go. And I would encourage people, if they have specific suggestions on how it could be improved, to do so. But make no mistake, we need to update this law. It's in desperate need of being updated, and the Department of Revenue has a real problem, it seems to me, in doing their job, and we ought to help them be able to do their job more effectively. And so I support it, even though I'm certainly open to other amendments that might come forward.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill as it's been amended? If not, all in favor of House File 1395, I can speak first. The chair renews his motion that House File 1395 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on State, Local, what?
As amended.
To the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Representative Coonan. And Representative Coonan's amendment is a bill, is part of the Game and Fish bill, and we're hearing his bill as a informational only. And if we have any recommendations we may have, we can pass them on in a memo form to the Game and Fish Committee. Representative Coonan, welcome to the committee. Please explain your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and committee members, House File 2811 allows counties to set bounty on coyotes. What the bill does is allow county boards by resolution to offer a bounty for coyotes. The bounty may apply to the whole county or any part of the county. The county board will set the amount of the bounty and the months it will be paid. The cost of the bounty will be paid by the counties, and there's no cost to the state, and there are no mandates in this bill for counties. Mr. Chairman, the bill is supported by the Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota Farmers Union, and the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association, and I also just received word that the townships also support the bill. And Mr. Chairman, I can take questions. Otherwise, Mr. Doug Peterson, Farmers Union President, is here to speak to the bill also.
Okay, is there any questions about the bill for the test for the Representative Eastland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a great bill. I have a facetious amendment. I was like, wondering if you'd include gray wolves as well, but probably wouldn't work.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Coonan,
that suggestion was made in the Fish and Game Committee also, but I don't think that's going on now.
Any other questions for the representative? If not, Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chairman, could you explain why this bill is not in front of the committee, and maybe you did and I didn't hear you?
It's sitting in Game and Fish, and it was laid over to be a possible inclusion in the Game and Fish bill. And okay, if we want to bring it down, we're hearing it for informational purposes. If we want to, we can pull the whole Game and Fish bill down here and have it heard here. And that's why we're hearing it here. If there was any objection, if there's a reason that we need to have it here for this piece of it, we can do that.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. If we don't, it just helps the Game and Fish bill get on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Representative Coonan.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
How many are there?
Concerns we're not going to do. I've just been informed that there's an amendment for the Gardner bill that that is not ready, so the Gardner bill will not be heard today. So if you're here for that, just so you know. The next bill would be Representative Kalin's bill, and he stepped out of the room.
Well, we should adjourn.
What's that?
We should do what Representative Pulaski does.
We'll give him a second. I know what Representative Pulaski would do, and here's Representative Kalin, yes.
Move to table?
Representative Kalin's bill, House File 3109.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your patience. I'll move House File 3109 if it has not yet been moved.
Has it been moved yet? No.
Okay. I'd like to move House File 3109. We have a DE1 amendment that I'd like to move as well. It is a delete all amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'd like it in.
Representative Kalin moves the House or DE. The 3109 DE1 amendment. Everyone has it in front of them to get the bill in the shape he wants. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3109 is a bill to help our businesses and homeowners to add a third means to finance energy efficiency improvements or renewable energy projects to their property. It is a voluntary program and a petition only, so optional program only for the participating homeowner. So the problem today, energy efficiency and energy conservation projects often have payback periods of 3, 4, or 5 years. For instance, upgrading your furnace for a small business, doing lighting, what are called lighting upgrades, lighting retrofits for buildings, let's say a commercial building, or replacing your windows. Those windows have longer payback periods, but the energy that you save each year pays for the capital improvement up front. To finance that capital improvement, which can be in a few thousand dollars for the case of a homeowner or in the hundreds of thousands of dollars or more, depending on the size of that commercial property, you have two options to finance that project that will pay for itself in a short period of time. One is cash savings, and the other is often in, for residences, a home equity loan, or for small businesses, something that's secured by the equity in your business. Often, those aren't enough. This tool called Property Assessed Clean Energy uses the very familiar tool to local governments of special assessments that are a tool that's chosen at the election of the property owner to put a special assessment on your property. The bill then authorizes revenue bonds to be sold by local units of government that are marketable because of the security of that special assessment. And the third thing the bill does is it sets up a financing administration program for those local units of government. The local government portion of the bill is Section 3 in the DE1 amendment on page 4, which fairly straightforwardly adds energy improvements financing program under the new codified Section 216C.36 to the existing list of special assessments that can be established by ordinance by local units of government. We've set it up so that any local unit of government, and Ms. Dyson can confirm this if I or correct me if I'm wrong, but any local unit of government that currently has special assessment authority can use this new authority. It is, again, optional. So it is optional by the local unit of government and optional for the individual property owner. The Section 2, which covers the program itself, has a list of basic requirements to ensure that the financing program works. This model has been used in roughly a dozen other states and communities. There are some programs that have been off the ground for 2 or 3 years and have had good success. The administration of the program will be left largely up to the local units of government, who can administer them themselves, who can contract with a third-party administrator like they can for any other service, unless we carve them out by statute and say that they cannot, and can also enter into joint powers agreements. So while the city of Minneapolis might set up their own program, Isanti County or Chisago County likely doesn't have the resources to run our own programs, so may elect to come together as a joint powers agreement. Those joint powers bodies need not be contiguous. The properties that elect to join in need not be contiguous. It is truly an individual choice by the individual local government and the individual property owner. I know that there are some folks who will be here to testify on the bill, and I think it may be best to allow those people to testify. I think Ms. Dyson wants to elucidate.
No. Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, when you're presenting the bill, I think there is a typo, actually, on page 5, line 2. The citation, it says 216C.36. Yes. I think it's 216C.436, which is the new section of statute with the proposed coding that's in the bill. So I'd recommend that be incorporated into your delete all that correction.
Representative Kalin incorporates that into his
thank you
his delete all amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to testifiers.
Are there any questions before we go to testimony? Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I was just kind of curious, is there any limitations to the amount and the size of these loans? Is that in here someplace that I'm looking at, or
Representative Kalin?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, it's a question that I've had as well, wanting to put a little bit of a fence around local units of government so we don't allow folks to get in over their head and get underwater with an energy improvement that's supposed to save them money. On line 3.11, you'll see paragraph 2 under the financing terms, a principal amount must not exceed the lesser of 10% of the appraised value of the real property or the actual cost of installing the energy improvements. So for a $200,000 appraised value of a house, that would be $20,000
unless, for instance, the new furnace costs $12,000, then they can only assess for that $12,000 cost.
Representative Eastland.
Where's the OR? You said there?
It's on line 3.12, the fifth to last word.
Or the actual cost of the. Okay.
Representative Eastland.
I think that's important. The other thing that's important is. I was going to ask on the, in the in, this is going to end up being a tax assessment. It's going to ultimately so if somebody did get in trouble with their home and paying taxes, how does that affect your mortgage and who's first in line and all of that sort of thing?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eastland, that's actually the advantage to this mechanism, again a voluntary mechanism over the home equity loan, is that you're placed in a primary lien in a primary position for financing. Now, if we, like every other special assessment, it's treated like any sidewalk improvement or curb and gutter that gets added, et cetera, that's on your property. And I'll just point out that we're working with the realtors to make sure that this works so it's fully disclosed, like every other special assessment on the property at the sale. And right now, we believe so. They're making sure in responding to the DE1 language that it does exactly that, and we'll make amendments if necessary to make it work.
Okay. Representative Eastland.
That's good.
Any other questions? Testifiers that want to come down. Got a John Herman. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Herman. I'm a lawyer at Fagry & Benson. I'm in the real estate and development finance area. I see I'm on the list as a lobbyist, and I guess I am, in that I do represent the American Institute of Architects, and I've been very active in this so-called jobs coalition over the last couple of years, trying to think of ways that we could encourage investments that made economic sense. And this specific provision has been in that bill for some time. It passed the Senate last session, and Representative Lencheski was kind enough to say of the whole thing, which didn't go last time, this was one of the ideas that she thought had substantial merit. Let me give the committee a little bit of background on my own experience with this Chapter 429 mechanism, because I think its function in the other areas where it's available illustrates why it will be so valuable in the energy improvement area. I have had a substantial number of commercial clients who have been required as part of the much more stringent runoff requirements of watershed districts to do substantial water quality ponding in conjunction with commercial development improvements. And if you look at 429, it currently provides that privately owned water quality improvements can be specially assessed. It's actually not in the amendment, but it's, if you look at the original bill, you would see this language. And the availability of doing these as special assessments has taken all the sting out of the government coming to you and saying, hey, we want you guys to separate your sanitary and your storm sewer, or we want you to, as part of this improvement, do a grit chamber or do a substantial new pond somewhere on your site. Similarly, I've had several clients installing skyway improvements who've taken advantage of the specific authority to have skyway improvements specially assessed back to the benefiting property. I think the critical element of this idea is, number one, that you have to demonstrate through a competent study that you're actually going to save money every year, consequently having an overall cash flow benefit for the property, and of course making anybody else who's got a loan on the property a bit more secure. And number two, that it is strictly voluntary, that an individual or a business owner would petition to have the 429 assessment placed on their property as the assurance mechanism for repayment of the financing.
I had a personal experience. I installed geothermal on my own home about 2 years ago now. Did the studies, looked to be somewhere between a 6-year and a 10-year payback, depending on the price of the geothermal, the price of the alternative fuel to the geothermal, the propane that I was heating with before. I would have loved a program like this because there's no real source of financing available for business and homeowners who want to do these kinds of improvements presently available in the market. Very difficult on a large-scale commercial installation to get consents for secondary financing. Sometimes it's difficult to find the lender to even ask. And if you've got the kind of safeguards that have been built in here by Representative Kalin in terms of sizing and cost and the assurance that you're saving money, I think that this will generate considerable interest in long-lived improvements to energy efficiency in the industrial, commercial. And I would offer one suggestion. In the definition of qualifying property, it talks about commercial or industrial building. I think it should also say an institutional building because, for example, I'm working presently with a private school that would do a geothermal installation, and we've actually talked to our local community about doing a 429 assessment if this were to pass, and they've expressed considerable willingness to consider that. So I think it should be expanded to cover institutional, so you pick up churches, hospitals, private educational institutions, and the like, because they are obviously good candidates for this type of energy improvement. So I'd be happy to answer questions.
Representative Kalin, you.
Just a brief point, Mr. Chair, and I think Mr. Herman's suggestion is a good one and one that we have tackled in other related energy legislation, and I believe since we're amending 216C, we'll go to the Energy Committee, and we'll work with Mr. Eliff, who staffs that committee, and with Chair Hilty to make sure that we're making wise choices about what's a qualified property. I think in the end, we've always decided that nonprofit institutions should have access to these kinds of programs, but I think it's a good suggestion.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Eastland.
I just have one. It maybe it's in here and I'm just not seeing it. Is there a requirement for the payback window, a maximum?
Chairman,
10 years or 12 years or 8 years or
the maximum period that's permitted with the special assessment statute is 20 years. So it would have to be within 20 years and it would be sized to be relevant to the useful life of the improvement that you were putting in. So, for example, a geothermal replacement for a propane system, like my own personal case, you know, that's a 50-year system, but the maximum you could assess it over would be 20 years.
Representative Kalin.
And, Mr. Chair and Representative Eastland, it's another good question. I've been working closely with Anderson Windows and Marvin Windows and other window manufacturers, because there's a wonderful sort of second layer impact in our state if we do this. Windows take a longer payback period because they cost so much. And, well, you know, often just caulking your existing windows can get you that first couple years of payback rather than the expensive actual capital improvement. The 20 years is important to allow the window and door in-state manufacturers to have access for their products to make it within this window. I still think it makes sense to keep it at 20 years, but the energy audit provision requires a rigorous analysis to make sure that these are positive cash flows.
Representative Eastland.
Yeah, and I guess my comment to that would be is that the longer the term extends out, you know, the more error, any slight error could actually affect this thing in a negative way, and it would just seem to me that the real benefit of this is to implement systems that have a much quicker payback, because that is a much more significant impact on our energy usage. I mean, so that would be kind of something I would it might be worth thinking about that. I mean, maybe a certain percentage of this or something needs to be focused on a more significant energy efficiency and some of the funds for law. But it seems like a 20-year payback isn't much of a payback, mm-hmm. as in kind of my way of thinking, and I would question whether that was even worth doing.
Representative Sterner.
Just looking at the financing, thank you, Chair Nelson, but looking at the financing, did you look at considering either like taking it for power companies as some program or some of the community banks? Is that considered in the early part of the bill?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we actually require, I'm looking for the portion in the actually kind of lost it, but there is a requirement, here we go, subdivision 4 on page 3, coordination with other programs to work with, and this is a debate among advocates of the bill about whether to make this voluntary or mandatory, because we require our energy, our utilities, excuse me, to run energy efficiency programs, including rebates and other financing tools. We want to make sure that those rebates are being used or those tools are being used and maximized, and the utility's interest is to get credit for the energy that's saved as a result, which they have to meet our state goals, and they get incentives on top of that anyway. So they want to get that credit. They want to be involved. We'll have that discussion in energy to make sure that works for them in the specific language.
All right. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Turner. Any other questions of the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Sure. Herman. Now Brad Leto. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brad Leto, the Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. The Minnesota AFL-CIO supports Representative Kalin's bill, House File 3109. As Mr. Herman mentioned, this bill is part of the Construction Jobs Coalition bill, a larger bill, which the other body is also considering, and the Senate companion to this bill is moving as well. The reason, I mean, we support this and this bill and part of the larger bill, first of all, is we're always ready to work on, and we have numerous thousands of tradespeople willing to work on energy efficiency and solar PV, which the bill mentions, and the investments that can be made in this legislation, according to the University of Berkeley, along with the U.S. Department of Commerce, Bureau of Economic Analysis, have calculated job creation numbers depending on the amount of money that's put forth. I'm not going to say it's thousands and thousands of jobs because it's not, but it depends on the amount of money. I mean, this portion could create anywhere up to 1,000 jobs or so. That doesn't mean it's going to, but I mean it certainly could, and anything that, and part of the larger Jobs Coalition bill will actually work towards creating those jobs. But besides the fact that it creates jobs, it's actually just going to be better for the environment and for the homeowner and for the business as well that goes through these energy improvements. As part of the Green Revenue Bond, the whole portion there is part of the Green Jobs Task Force, which I sat on with co-chairs Kalin and Senator Alan Anderson, was one of the things that we did discuss at some length with people from all areas and people from both political parties that were on the committee was the Green Revenue Bonds, that it's a good mechanism to use to try and make some of these improvements. So thank you very much, and we do support the legislation.
Any questions for the testifier? If not, I've got Craig Johnson on the list, who's been scurrying around in the background. Please state your name. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm here with the League of Minnesota Cities, scurrying around trying to make sure that this program does exactly what we're aiming to do, which is create a really, I think, exciting new tool for local governments to use to have voluntary programs to allow property owners to improve their properties in ways that benefit energy efficiency and renewable energy. Members, I'm sure you're aware local governments actually have some very strong public expectations, but also some policy expectations that they lead the way in reducing energy use and in creating renewable energy. This is one of the ways that we can do that, is by helping people find alternate financing mechanisms. Many of these energy projects have as a hurdle that they have a lot of upfront capital required to really get them done. And this just allows property owners to have one other way to leverage that, that doesn't require them to take equity out of their home, that doesn't require them to do some of those more challenging, especially under current credit rules, ways of getting credit for this type of project. And of course, it is done completely voluntarily. What I have been working on with the author and Ms. Dyson is on language to make it very clear, because it is our intent, and I think the intent of everyone that I've talked to so far, to make it make sure this is really a voluntary involvement, that it's not intended to be a special assessment district where you suddenly get told there's an assessment on your property because there was renewable energy built in your neighborhood. It's meant to be that you request on your property an improvement that's going to be financed through a special assessment collection process to repay that debt, is really what it is, a financing tool more than a special assessment district. So the only...
I see Ms. Dyson has some language here in front of her.
She's very quick, Mr. Chair.
She is.
So, Mr. Chair, I would just add that the League of Cities has been working with the other proponents of this legislation. We feel it's a very good model. It's being 16 states have adopted legislation that enables their local governments to do this sort of thing. As you can guess, in the current economic situation, there really hasn't been a lot of demand for this right now, but to have everything in place and the program ready to go to allow local units of government to build this if they need it, I think is a very good step to have us ready for that.
Ms. Dyson, do you have language then, or that Representative Kalin?
I think if it reflects what Mr. Johnson and I have been talking about, I think if Ms. Dyson could read the proposed addition, I think will happen in line 3.6.
Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and members, the proposed amendment to clarify the voluntary nature of this, I actually put it after 3.2, but 3.6 right. Works too. It would be adding one more clause that would read, require, to give you the grammar, this subdivision starts out by saying a financing program must, and this clause would continue with, require a petition by all owners of the qualifying real property requesting collection of repayments as a special assessment under section 429.101, which is the collection mechanism through the special assessment process.
I'd like to move that amendment.
Representative Kalin moves the amendment, handwritten amendment that was explained by Ms. Dyson. You want to incorporate it in your delete all amendment?
I think we've adopted the DE1 amendment, and because it is a lengthy, not a few words, I think I suggest we vote on it, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
I'm being whispered in my ear over here that that's what we need to do. So we have the amendment, the delete all amendment, and I'll read it again here. It's page 3, after line 2, insert parentheses 9. Require a petition by all owners of the qualifying real property requesting collection of repayments as a special assessment under section 429.101J.
No, semicolon.
Semicolon. And then renumber the semicolon, and then that renumber the remaining clauses. Does everybody have the understand the amendment? With that, well, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. So with that, Representative Eastland.
Thanks, Scott. So there's a number of places that have got this program implemented. What can you tell us? What is typically the comparison of the bond rates or the rates that this gets issued at to the homeowner, to the business owner versus market rates? Do we know?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I do not know. I think we have some people here with direct experience with how these programs have worked. As I said, in the other states, they mostly have only passed the enabling legislation. I think Boulder, Colorado is one place that's got it going actively, and I don't have that number. I can certainly get it for you.
Representative Eastland.
Mr. Chair, and I guess my concern is this whole area of housing is where we had some huge issues. You know, people getting upside down in their loans, and upside down may not just mean that the equity is worth less than the loan. But I mean, we have all of those issues that work against this as well. But there's a lot of reference in here that it's going to be based on their ability to repay, and I guess. Typically, when things are offered through some kind of a government agency, the ability to repay is kind of assessed a little bit more generously. And I guess that's what I'm concerned about. That we get into something here without a lot of specifics. That people get real excited about something, and all of a sudden we got people borrowing money. You know, it's kind of a government program, and we're going to get people hung out a little farther than they want to be. And I think that's just a concern I have with this kind of a program.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eastland, I'm a little bit nervous that you and I have been thinking along the exact same lines today. It's kind of a joke.
That's scary.
It is. It is. And to think we have to do a town hall tomorrow night as well. You know, we may actually be on the same page there. I've had those same concerns. One of the things that has assuaged my concern is that these are not tax-exempt bonds, but they're taxable bonds. And it is driven by the market, by how marketable those bonds are. And so any concerns about the ability to repay, those bonds won't be saleable. They won't be marketable. And then the limits, the cap, the 10% of equity, of appraised value. If you'll notice on line 3.1, clause 8 requires that the program not provide financing in which the owner has negative equity or is not even current or on what either the mortgage or property tax payments. So pretty much you need to have a crystal clean credit and tax record across the board to be able to access this tool.
Representative Eastland.
You know, and I understand that, but it goes to my first question. How does the rate of the bonds relate to the market? Because what you do is you buy risk.
Right.
So the rate goes up. So if the bonds are being sold and we're selling this credit at 3 or 4 points over the market, so people can do this stuff, and we're kind of giving people a go ahead to go and do something on their home that they probably shouldn't be doing. I think there's some safeguards that we should be thinking about in there, and that I don't really see in here that would be helpful for me.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Craig Johnson.
Johnson or Johnson.
All right. There is a Carlson that is my boss, so I'm always glad to be referred to him. Mr. Chair and Representative, we don't disagree with that. We do want to make sure there are good safeguards. Local units of government are going to have to decide how to set this up to make it work, and we definitely do want to avoid those kind of situations. One thing I can tell you with the revenue bond financing is it's one of the reasons you haven't seen a lot of implementation of this program so far is because it is very difficult to finance through revenue bonds right now. We've seen that in a couple of state programs that the micro energy loan program had a very difficult time. You'll see some more stuff on that later this session, I'm sure. So, and I think we do have someone here who actually knows something about how this is bonded in other states.
Can I just make one comment? Well, you're coming down here. One of the ways to put that safeguard in would put some accountability back on the local government that's issuing these revenue bonds. In the case of default, maybe they would share some of the risk there. I don't know, but I think there needs to be some way to be able to rein in the willingness just to loan money because we can do it if people are willing to borrow it. I think that's kind of an issue I'm concerned about.
Representative Kalin.
Just Mr. Chair, I would just direct Representative Eastland and the committee to Subdivision 7 at the bottom of Section 3, just to review as Mr. Henkel talks about the bond repayments.
And Representative Biskins, you had a question before we go to the next testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to hear the next testifier. He might answer my question.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lynn Henkel, H-I-N-K-L-E. I represent the Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association. I'm happy to be here to speak on behalf of this bill and in particular enjoy having the opportunity to talk again to Representative Eastland about this innovative policy. To your question, Representative Eastland, I think it's easiest to refer to those parts of the country that have already had some experience with this program. One of those areas is Boulder County in Colorado, which has aggregated 11 cities into its program, so it had sufficient strength in the bond market to be viable. What happened there is that they solicited applications for the program, and then they released a bond based strictly on the enrollment of people who had solicited, just as we've indicated we would do with 429, the construction of 429 special assessment districts. And the results were, at least in the first round, the first tranche, $9.55 million of funding was raised with 519 properties, some of which were residential and some of which were commercial and industrial. Of that $9.55 million, $3.6 million was in PV or photovoltaics, $500,000 in solar thermal projects, and the remainder, not surprising, was in energy efficiency. As to the question of interest rates, Boulder sold its bonds at 5.6% interest, keeping in mind, as Representative Kalin indicated, that these are not tax-exempt bonds, and then added 1% to cover its cost to offer a total of 6.68% to end users. And at that rate, we're still able to enroll to gain the participation of 519 properties.
Representative Eastland?
Yeah, I think that's just good information. And I don't know how long these programs have been in place. I mean, we're living in a time of relatively low interest rates, and so, I mean, I don't know how that would work over time. But, you know, my concern would be, as I said earlier, that, I mean, if somehow it becomes a kind of a last resort kind of way to finance energy improvements that people really want to do and they're willing to take a bigger risk to do it, I just think that's kind of counterproductive, and I would be concerned that there'd be some safeguard in here regarding that.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The sentence that strikes me most, and Representative Kalin, you alluded to this on Subdivision 7, particular page 3, lines 3.34, the sentence that begins there. To the testifier, and I didn't catch your name, is this sentence also found in the Boulder enabling legislation? Is this the same sentence that's found in the other 16 states? Because without the full faith and credit of the local taxing jurisdiction, I'm having trouble understanding the incentive for a bond purchaser.
Mr. Hinkle? Mr. Carlson, or Mr. Johnson?
Carlson.
I can't get it straight.
thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins. I'm not certain with all of the other states enabling legislation. I'm aware of some, certainly in the case of Colorado, in the enabling legislation that was passed there for the Boulder County example that I just cited. This is similar language that's contained in that enabling legislation. I think the idea is to create a situation that has sufficient strength as a tax lien on your property based on the special assessment, the construction of special assessment districts to provide the security, sufficient security for that to actually activate the bond market and propel people into that space. The other part of this is to try to create a no-cost proposition for local jurisdictions other than finding provisions to fold in administrative cost, which is also one of the reasons why you've seen aggregation of cities. For example, the Boulder example, Sonoma County is another example where the economies of scale have allowed them to depress the cost. And I think that's also one of the reasons that we've seen some enthusiasm from the League of Minnesota Cities and counties in developing this program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins, if I don't know, I'd hate to interrupt you. This may be helpful. I believe, and Ms. Dyson could, thank you, Mr. Chair, could confirm this, but I believe that paragraph C in that subdivision is the boilerplate language for revenue bonds, so we don't create a GO obligation and thus put non-participating properties at risk of paying back that bond.
Representative Biskins.
And thank you, Representative Kalin. I guess you talk about the economies of scale, and I understand that. I would think that the economy of scale could be created through cooperative program without government intervention. Different corporations, companies could get together and say, let's look at this together and probably achieve the same thing. My concern is, again, without the full faith and credit, then the one big surety of a bond purchaser would be essentially, and I hate to be crass, but it's the police power of the local municipality, right? That eventually this will get paid back, right? Because it is assessed on the property taxes. Now, one of the things that concerns me is prior to the assessment being satisfied, right? What if the business were to fail? And now I understand that the bondholder is put on delay, right? But they're assured of getting paid back once the property is resold, right? And the business is up. But with that assessment sitting on there, right, does that not automatically drive up the resale price and potentially keep a vacant commercial property on the market longer than it may ought to be without this special assessment sitting on it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, just briefly, those are the considerations that we're working out with the realtors to make sure that they're comfortable with that concern, as well as wanted to wait for this committee to get a fully amended and engrossed version of the bill again to bond council to provide an opinion for the security of all of us, pun intended, that these will be marketable bonds.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, it's clear that to me at least that the obligation for the repayment of the bonds or the loan for the improvement would be on the property. But I'm not finding anywhere in the amendment that there's a requirement that the improvement stay with the property. I can kind of envision a circumstance in which if you installed, say, solar photovoltaic panels in a property that you could, in fact, if you decided to move, just take them with you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I think on line 1.16, the permanently affixed language may address that. If you feel like we need to beef it up when we get to your committee, I'm happy to work with you to do so.
Representative Hilty.
Well, I did look at that, Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, but that's only one of the three situations described there, and paragraph 3 says a renewable energy system attached to or installed within or proximate to a building.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty,
it's not clear to me that permanently affixed applies to all three of those conditions.
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I'm at your discretion, Chair Hilty, I'm happy to work with you so that we get so that we can add that language to the other clauses and make sure that that's clear.
Representative Eastland, you had another question?
Yeah, I just had one comment. It kind of was related a little bit to what Representative Biskins was talking about. But, I mean, and I think we talked about this when you were in my office, too. The Boulder, Colorado is a great example, but it's a pretty affluent area. You know, there's a lot of areas in our state that, that don't have the affluence, which would, in a sense, provide a lot more security for a bonding project that would benefit from this. So I just think that's a kind of a... an issue that how do we is there some equity here? Smaller counties. I mean, they can work together with other units, but I think just it's more attractive to go to a very affluent area because the security is there, and it could possibly mean that interest rates are lower there than they would be if there was a higher level of risk. So I think those are just questions that I, you know, kind of come to my mind. And then the other thing is if we're looking at a value, I think. It should all be understood that if we're making improvements on homes and businesses that are amounting to 10% of their value, there's an automatic tax benefit to the county immediately, mm-hmm. other than just paying the assessment. So I think we got to weigh all of the motives involved here, and there should be some consideration of that so we aren't stretching to get people into things they can't afford.
Representative Scalzi.
Well, I just was going to comment. A few years ago, the local government committee enabled cities to have to finance improvements by an uncontested assessment. I remember a local community wanted to bury their power lines in their neighborhood, and we did grant that. And I have a couple of cities that have used the housing improvement areas, and it's been a way for them to improve their properties in their community in a way that otherwise they wouldn't work. It just would not work. And so I think that having another tool for communities to do energy improvements, I think, would be very beneficial to the local communities.
Okay. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to speak for or against the bill? Any more questions from the committee? Representative Kalin, if you want to wrap up quickly and we can then get to a vote.
I think we've had a good thorough discussion and really appreciate the time and ask for member support, so I'll renew my motion that House File 3109 as amended be recommended to pass and returned to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections, wherever the commas may be.
Thank you. All in favor of the amendment?
Biskins.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, would then the next stop probably be to the Energy Policy Committee?
I'm assuming that's probably where it would be, yes.
Mm. Yeah, we may, and I don't know whether that will be through, well, since there's no money expended here and it's an enabling, probably through the Policy Committee, but we'll, yeah, I know that we'll have to talk about it in Hilty's committee.
Okay. Representative. Okay. Then all in favor of the bill as amended, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As amended. And Representative Sterner makes a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting.
Yep, I'd like to make a motion to approve the February 22nd meeting.
All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And with that, meeting's adjourned.